The Guardian.
Football Weekly arrives Weezen at the end of the season, packed with games played for no reason. But we'll try and do a little bit of crowd pleasing as we round up playoffs, top four, farewells and foreign bits, plus your posts, all coming up in this Football Weekly Extra. Yeah, so it's an agreeable end of term feeling really here. You know, that kind of mixture of poignancy, but also, you know, the promise of long empty days ahead through the summer. As we approach this final weekend of the season, if you're just joining us, the week of games that we've had continues this evening, Thursday evening, with Leicester Spurs. But all that's really left in the Premier League is the last two top four spots. The three contenders, Man City, Liverpool and Arsenal, all won midweek. As it stands, Man City on 75 points, 2 points behind them, Liverpool on 73, a point behind them, Arsenal on 72 with worst goal difference. I've got a long list of explanations about what Arsenal need to finish in the top four, but it comes down to either some kind of catastrophic bit of Man City-ness from City or Liverpool slipping up. So let's start with the chances of Liverpool slipping up. Here in the pod today, we have Greg Bukowski.
Hi, James.
Hi, Greg. James Horncastle.
Hey, Jimbo.
Hey. And Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
All right there. Liverpool, Greg, in one of the games that actually might mean potentially something this weekend, are facing Borough. Yeah.
Which is handy when you need to qualify for the Champions League and you've got one game to do it.
Right, all the signs point to a battering.
They do. I mean, the only thing, Liverpool have been bad against teams who've been expected to beat this season at Anfield. However, this is Borough, who can't score and recently can't defend. And it's a one-off game, and in a one-off game, I mean, if they can't raise themselves for this, like, there won't be a flat atmosphere as there have been for these mid-season ones against, you know, Swansea, against other teams that they should have beat. I think for this one, the crowd will be up for it, the team will be up for it, and if they fail, then they don't deserve to be in the Champions League.
Do you not feel that maybe Liverpool have a little bit raided that cliche about being weaker against the weaker sides to bed with their last couple of performances? I mean,
they've been away from home, though. That's the thing. Right. It's at Anfield where the problem is. It's not away from
home.
Why
do you think that is?
I think Klopp would like to know. I do think the crowd don't help, because it's this era of expectancy now. People just turn up, expect the team to roll over. Maybe the good start to the season didn't help, because they were so good and so at it early on that the expectancy became even greater post-Christmas.
Right.
I just think these games haven't been started at the pace that Klopp would expect them to. But I think for this one, it's the last game of the season. Everything's riding on it for the Champions League place. They'll have to be up for it.
They're going to come out of the blocks.
Is it tactical as well, do you think? Teams coming to Anfield and just basically parking the bus, and Liverpool tend to have difficulty breaking those teams down.
Yeah, to some extent. Although at the beginning of the season, we kind of did that. It's not like teams came to Anfield and had a go at them then. I think the main problem was Mane's absence in that time, and Coutinho being injured. It was down to injuries then. Coutinho's taking his time to come back. Now he's back at, you know, in his form again. He can unlock defences in the way that players who were playing in his absence weren't able to.
Right. Do you know, as previously mentioned in the pod, if both Liverpool and Arsenal do finish level on points, which could happen with level goal difference and goals scored, they would have to go into a playoff, eh, Greg? Which is a bit tricky, because Liverpool, they're off to Australia on Wednesday to play Sydney FC.
Well, that'll be enough then. Sorry, we can't be in the Champions League next year, but off to Australia. Yeah, wow. I'm guessing it's not going to happen, though, is it? Yeah, I think Liverpool's goal difference is two greater than Arsenal.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Will Arsenal score the goals they need to in the final game?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? That's a question. Well, just before we come on to Arsenal, should we salute Daniel Sturridge and what could be his last appearance for the club?
Yeah, a bit of sadness around that, I feel.
Will it be, do you think, his valedictory?
Well, I mean, football fans are funny the way they change their opinions just from game to game. And there's some polls you see of Liverpool fans wanting him to stay now because he came back and scored a goal and looked good. I think it's just what... It's the possibilities for Daniel Sturridge if he was able to keep himself fit, because he's not just like a prolific striker when he's on form. It's the fact that he's got loads of guile. He's really creative, and I think that's what Liverpool have missed a bit, in that Coutinho and him seem to have a very good understanding, because they're both intelligent players, and they can both do, create something out of nothing. And I don't think Liverpool will get a replacement for fully fit Daniel Sturridge for you know, a cheap price. I think they'll have to pay an absolutely extraordinary amount to get a player of that quality again.
If you were Jurgen Bukowski, with your glasses and your sideline
there
antics.
Probably is a Jurgen Bukowski somewhere whose ears just pricked up when he said that.
What would you do? Would you keep Daniel Sturridge? Break glass in case of emergency?
I don't think you can rely on him. I think he's proven now that his injuries aren't... I think he's always going to get injured. And the problem with him is, if Daniel Sturridge was able to accept himself his own limitations and a place on the bench more regularly without having such a big face on, that'd be fine. But he does get a big face on, and I don't think he would be good having him around the club just as a substitute.
Moping.
Yeah, if you know, Klopp could probably keep him by saying, listen, Daniel, next season you're going to be our number one striker.
Right.
Put him on the bench as soon as the season starts, and I just don't think that would...
Do you think a lot of clubs are going to be in for Sturridge?
I would imagine probably yes, because there's such a stunning lack of imagination among clubs when it comes to buying strikers, and there aren't that many good strikers available. I think he will leave Liverpool because he'll want opportunities elsewhere, more game time. I don't think he's Jurgen Klopp's kind of player. He doesn't necessarily do what he's told, and he's lost that bit of pace that used to set him apart from many of his peers, whether that's through injury or he's just getting a little bit older, I don't know, but I can see him leaving Liverpool and going to some sort of mid-ranking to lower end Premier League team, and there's no shortage of them who'd be glad to have him.
Depends on the price as well, what they want for the striker who's known to be injured. I think at a mid ranking Premier League team, the problem would be that when things aren't going the way of the team he's playing in, like they haven't for Liverpool sometimes, he just drops so deep and he comes looking for the ball in his own half, and it's just not helpful to have a striker who just goes walkabout looking for the ball.
The one thing I would say about this game is it's basically Borough's final opportunity just to do something this season to make people sit up and go, oh, that was good.
That's true.
Like, they have contributed nothing.
Twice. Pardon? They did beat Sunderland twice. So they have that.
Didn't pretty much everyone.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
I am concerned this is the game that Adama Traore will score the seven goals he's, often threatened to score in one game.
Patrick Bamford has hit a rich vein of form.
That's true.
He's got one goal in 2 years, I think.
Could the same dynamic also be in play here that affected Hull when they played Sunderland? Opposite ends of the table, of course, but Sunderland kind of already relegated.
Right.
You picked them, Barry, partly because the pressure got to Hull.
Yeah.
The pressure of basically, we need to stay up. It's the same with Liverpool here in terms of we need to stay in the top four.
So maybe I
would love to think, just for the sheer entertainment value, that Middlesbrough could do a number on Liverpool. But I think it was Bournemouth they played. And Bournemouth just... It was like watching Bournemouth take on a team of dummies out of a shop window or something. The way they absolutely passed through them and scored, I think, after about 90 seconds. Middlesbrough are terrible.
Well, Watford are taking on City. Do you want to talk about that, or you want to talk about Arsenal? Because, of course, none of this is particularly relevant. If Arsenal stuff it up at home to Everton, which is their fixture this Sunday, did you know, Greg, it was 19 years ago, almost to the day, that Arsenal were taking on Everton, and this happened.
Now Bold. And it's Tony Adams put through by Steve Bold. Would you believe it? That sums it all up.
That sums it all up. That was Arsene Wenger's first Premier League title, in the words of Martin Tyler.
My overriding memory of that match is just seeing that Everton fan who was absolutely blotto in the front row, just asleep whilst Arsenal were going on to win the title. Just fantastic. The whole second half, he was just fast asleep. He just kept cutting to him. All this drama's going on and he's just there like this, asleep. I just put my body to the side there and put my head on the shoulder.
It's very nicely done.
Would Everton do Liverpool a favour?
Well, I've seen a lot of weird chat on social media, Evertonians saying that, do you not want us to just stuff it up, so we can kind of put the pressure on Liverpool, but I don't think so. I would have thought Everton would want to prove that they're good enough to perhaps, you know, finish above Arsenal next season with the investment they've had. And I actually think they've got a good chance of winning this game because their midfield is really, really strong. They've got so much kind of quality and physical attributes in there. I think Idrissa Gana Gueye's been really good this season. He's such a good interceptor. He's one of the best holding kind of players around kind of Kante style players around, and Arsenal might look at him and think, "Ooh, he's quite handy."
At winning the ball back in midfield than Arsenal. You'd think well, if you yeah, put that midfield in Arsenal.
The way they basically outfought, won the battle against Man City to go and beat them 4-0 at home was down to that midfield and Tom Davies, who's some talent for, I think he's 18 or is he 19 now? The age of him, he's so good and so assured for his age. I think Everton stand a good chance of ruining things for Arsenal this weekend should Liverpool or City slip up.
Right, that's interesting. Arsenal coming off that 2-0 win Tuesday night against Sunderland. With the phantom crowd, the official attendance 59,000 and about 59 people, I think, was perhaps closer to the...
Yeah, I mean, that kind of thing wreaks havoc for myself and Max and Justin Moorhouse, comedian, each Sunday.
Nicely on done.
Radio play Guess the Attendance.
Right.
Where Max picks games out of the Times or Observer.
Right.
Oh, always the Observer, actually.
Right.
And we have to guess the... We take it very, very seriously.
So you have to guess the attendance?
Yes.
Okay.
And whoever's closest, you know, it's best of five.
Mm-hmm.
And... But you get... We're basically guessing the official attendance, right, not necessarily the number of people who were there, because right, clubs fib. They include season ticket holders who don't turn up in the attendance.
Mm.
But a lot of Arsenal fans did not bother turning up.
Right, and those that did turn up weren't that bothered by the performance, even though they did win 2-0, a laboured victory. Although Arsenal's record now, 4 wins in a row, they've only conceded 1 goal in that time, 6 wins indeed out of their last 7. How's that for timing?
Well, I mean, they always finished the season strongly, but Arsene Wenger's been moaning about teams, you know, sort of being on holidays early and how it's unfair on his side, but his side sort of take their holidays in early spring, so perhaps if they kept their own house in order, it wouldn't matter.
Fact of the matter is for Arsenal that though they got the 3 points, they didn't get the goals they needed, because as you mentioned, Greg, Liverpool's goal difference is +2 compared to the Gunners, and I think Arsenal thought this is where they were going to fill their boots, and they had 36 attempts at goal, which is the most in the Premier League game since 2003.
But they ran into Jordan Pickford.
They ran into Jordan Pickford. Who was it the other day who was here? Was it Simon Burton saying that he goes all gooey when he sees Jordan Pickford? And I think he particularly mentioned his distribution. My word, did you see that side volley that he
that
belted
amazing,
out?
Yeah.
Jeepers.
That was probably the pass of the match round, wasn't it?
So, okay, now, James, you see a lot of Gigi Donnarumma, who you would probably bill as perhaps Europe's up-and-coming
keeper.
Doesn't
have that distribution.
Doesn't have that distribution. Who would you sign if you were building a club right now? The Pickford or Donnarumma?
I think Pep Guardiola was asked about this, wasn't he, during the week, and he was saying, oh, Donnarumma's a great goalkeeper, and that was taken to me, and that City are very interested in him. But I must say, Pickford has really impressed regularly in this Sunderland side when not injured. Was Wenger asked about this after or before the game, when he said, look, we don't need a goalkeeper because we've got Cech, we've got Szczesny, who's been having an exceptional season on loan at Roma, and Ospina, but a number of clubs I think you could do with him. You'd look at City and maybe think that's something that they would go for, A, because he's an English player as well.
Joe Harder coming back.
Well, interestingly, the only reason Pickford is actually in the Sunderland team is because David Moyes couldn't persuade Joe Hart to come to Sunderland. It was beneath him, apparently.
Mm. As I think we mentioned at the time,
they'd have been relegated a lot earlier if he'd been there.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if he would have been the starting keeper after the first 2 weeks. His form has been rotten, especially since the turn of the year in Turin.
Yeah, and it was terrible at the weekend when they lost 5-0 to Napoli.
And if Guardiola looked place. At Sunderland, how they played out from the back so smoothly as well.
So anyway, well, that's Arsenal. And so a word of warning there from Greg Bukowski.
There have been some very good Arsenal-Everton matches over the years. I remember 2-2 some years ago. I'm going to go 2-2.
Rooney. kind of made his name in this game.
There you go.
Of course.
Yeah. There you go. Okay. However it finishes, of course, Everton are in Europe. Hooray! Yeah.
Hooray! And they were in Europe a few seasons ago. Did okay.
Very nice. Man City not mathematically confirmed in the top four yet. They need a point. Is that right?
They need a point at Watford.
Need a point.
What a strange
at Watford
game that will be.
It's going to be a strange game. It's going to be a goodbye in what is a weekend of goodbyes for Walter Mazzarri, the beloved helmsman of the Hornets. This news breaking after Monday's 4-3 defeat for Watford at Champions Chelsea, which was their fifth loss in a row. They're 6 points above the drop zone, but the Pozzos decided that they weren't very excited about continuing with Mazzarri. What's the story here, James?
Well, that the players were upset with him. They didn't like working under him. And he was still very reliant on a translator, even in training. And I think that meant it was difficult for anyone to kind of develop any kind of rapport with him. But, you know, I mean, if the results are good, it doesn't necessarily matter. We saw that with Pochettino when he was at Southampton, you know, for a good year, 18 months, he was still very dependent on a translator or didn't feel confident enough speaking in press conferences in English. But I just think with Mazzarri, there's the sense that they haven't really kicked on from where they were last year, which is the reason behind the parting of the ways with Kike Sanchez Flores. They needed 5 points from the last couple of games to better what they did under Kike, and instead they've gone from possibly finishing the top 10 to just being outside the relegation zone.
Mm. Watford's next manager, whoever it is, they're talking about Claudio Ranieri and Marcus Silva, will be anyway their ninth in 5 years and the eighth since the Pozzo family took over in 2012. Let's hear from Watford fans. Simon Burnton writes in and says, you have to imagine this in a Simon Burnton voice. Ideally, we get him in just to... But anyway, he says, when his side lost 1-0 against Liverpool recently, Mazzarri told the media that usually I don't like to speak about luck, but today we were completely unlucky. It was a bizarre turn of phrase from someone who complained that his side were unlucky after games against Bournemouth, Stoke, Southampton, Chelsea and Hull, had no luck at all on a very unlucky day at Crystal Palace, were not very lucky at Swansea and missed a bit of luck against Middlesbrough. In fact, Mazzarri speaks about luck almost constantly, most recently moaning that the injury crisis currently affecting his defence is very unlucky and I'm very angry. Famously in Italy at Inter... He blamed it all on rain, didn't he?
He did. That was one particular defeat. And used to start taking big bites out of plastic water bottles in his frustration.
But just got that song in my head now. I can't stand the rain.
There you go. Nicely done, Greg.
Walter Mazzarri resembles what I imagine if the sculptor who did the Ronaldo bust was commissioned to do...
Alec Baldwin.
A young Alec Baldwin, right. That is what it would okay. look like.
Forza Watford, meanwhile, is having an existentialist crisis. He'd be interested to hear the pod's thoughts, because he's a Watford fan, but has been thoroughly underwhelmed by the last two seasons. We said it comfortably in both, but what's the point if the team is just going to amass 40 points and then give up, as they've done in the last two seasons? Do other fans of other similar-sized clubs feel the same way? I enjoy being in the Premier League and watching some great players week in, week out, but the Championship... was just a lot more fun. Should Forza Watford be more grateful? And is it just because this particular season has been a bit pants?
Well, I don't think he's alone, because I remember when Watford came up, Simon Burnton was thoroughly underwhelmed because he had a feeling this would happen and preferred the roller coaster, white knuckle ride of life in the Championship.
Yeah.
Watford. Sorry, go on, Pascal. I was going to say, Watford are pretty much the only team this year who haven't, towards the bottom end of the table, haven't been threatened by relegation. I mean, maybe Stoke as well. And there's something about that, not even having that drama to look forward to.
No alarms and no surprises.
Yeah, it's just they've just been like Premier League inertia.
Yeah. Well, the good news is for Watford that the London area, the catchment area, contains plenty of other professional clubs that might provide you with more drama, you know, for the same money or even less.
Did you see the memes when Chelsea won the league last Friday night?
Did they win the league? Because we didn't mention that on Monday's pod. Oh, for goodness sake. Our coverage of Chelsea was called disgusting by one Chelsea fan.
Really?
Yeah. He was so angry he had to switch it off.
So how does he know you didn't cover it?
I don't know. Anyway, sorry.
At least you didn't leave any Indiana Jones stone unturned.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't believe you had that debate in my absence.
Well, would you rather we had it when you were here?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Excellent. Well, we'll make sure to schedule that.
I like Temple of Doom.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, and oh, wow. Crystal Skull was the most disappointing movie I've ever seen.
Don't worry, listeners, we're not going to do this now. We'll find a venue for that, and it'll happen.
I feel like it's been done 5 or 6 times over already. Proper Groundhog Day.
James, you were saying about Chelsea memes when they won the Champions.
Oh, no, the meme was in Italy, it was Ranieri 2016.
Oh, yeah.
Conte 2017.
Right.
Mazzarri 2018 question mark, but obviously that's not going to happen now.
Well, it depends where he goes.
Yeah.
It depends where he goes. The other fact about Conte being champion is that Russian champions, Italian manager. German champions, Italian manager. Italian champions, Italian manager. And of course Chelsea, Italian manager.
It's the first time since 96-97 that's happened. People think this is a new phenomenon, but it happened back when Trapattoni was manager of Bayern, Capello was manager of Real Madrid, and Lippi was manager of Juventus.
What's the name of that place in
Coverciano.
Italy?
Coverciano.
Yeah. Rory Smith did a feature on
it. Well, a lot of people. Paolo Bandini's been down there as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, basically the Scuola Allenatori, the manager's school, where a lot of ex-pros, I mean, James, you'll explain this better, go and they basically do a course and they write splendid theses and it's like a finishing school for...
Yeah, where they teach you to think kind of independently of yourself, not to... There isn't one Italian way, so to speak. You're sort of taught to come up with your own style and innovate, and that's why Italian managers seem to keep winning.
What happened in Gianfranco Zola's class?
Yeah, magic box doesn't have any tricks, obviously. Does
it? That's a shame, isn't it? The irony being, of course, they'll come out and play Catenaccio, as we know. So,
yeah.
Right, now Man City had a game midweek, and it was quite exciting. They scored goals. And Pablo Zabaleta said his goodbyes after 9 years at the club. And also, it was against West Brom, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And also, Pep Guardiola came out and said, surprisingly, in my situation at a big club, I'm sacked. I'm out, sure, definitely. At the clubs I worked at before, I am not here for the following season. But here we have a second chance. We'll try and do better. Was he still drunk, do you think? Because famously, Tony Pulis is Tony Pulis and red wine is red wine.
Yeah, he'd had a few, had he? So,
he said that before.
And apparently he doesn't eat.
Oh.
Yeah, I think that was those quotes were going into the match.
Oh, were they?
Yeah.
Right.
Doesn't he not eat a long time before games?
I don't know.
He's too wound up. So
really?
If he's had a few glasses of hon-hee-hon on an empty stomach, it's not going to be conducive to sensible talking.
No, it wasn't sensible talk, was it? Effectively, he said...
Well, it's fair enough. I mean...
But he said Man City are not a big club. Barry, you can't do that.
He has said this before. Like, for example, during their Champions League campaign, he was like, we are not a big club. We do not have a culture of playing at this higher level in this competition, even though they'd reached the semi-finals the year before. And it's something that Roberto Mancini used to say when he was in charge, and people used to give him a lot of stick about it because he said, look, this is a team that has players who've won the Champions League, like Yaya Toure, have played Champions League games, but as a team we haven't played that many before. But the thing is, they've been doing this for years now. They've been regularly getting in the Champions League, so there's not really an excuse.
No excuse? All right. Well, it was a fine win anyway. 3-1 against West Brom, and Jesus has now got 6 goals and 3 assists in 7. Yaya Toure, that's 7 goals in 30 appearances, which is amazing given how the season started, when he was basically...
He looks like he's going to get another contract. That's right, isn't he?
Wow.
That's I read in the week. It was his birthday as well, wasn't it, the other day? So some fan took a little birthday cake along to the match with them.
Did they?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's cool. Well, do you remember what happened last
time? His agent suggested that it would be a good idea if City fans brought cake along.
Right. Always a good idea, in my opinion.
Well, there aren't many situations that can't be improved by the presence of cake.
Mm. It's the same with Conte going on about
chocolate cake. Diabetic crisis, probably. That would be one. Conte, right. Well, of course, yeah. And it was it Diego Costa who he went? Well, we'll come on to Chelsea in a bit. That's probably enough for part one. Up next, we'll have a little romp through the rest of the games from this weekend and then turn our thoughts to playoffs and stuff. End of season, a poignant time. I said this before, particularly this time you've got Lukaku maybe waving goodbye to Everton and Sanchez in that game maybe saying farewell to the Arsenal supporters. I don't know. JT is going to be almost certainly making his last appearance as a Chelsea player at Stamford Bridge when Chelsea take on Sunderland, Barry.
Yes.
Right. Goodbye, JT. Doesn't that make you feel old?
No.
All right, then.
I felt old for quite a long time. Goodbye, Ryan Giggs made me feel old.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
What was the? Have you had a game? You're too young to feel old, James, but have you had a game or a player's retirement that's made you sense the passage of time, that the hand of death or mortality on your shoulder?
Well, Rooney, seeing what's happened to Rooney, I suppose, now. Yeah, because he's younger than I am, and now he looks a lot older than I am.
Right. So.
But I feel old because of that. Feels like an awful long time ago since he burst out into the scene.
So when he got the hair transplant, was that in a sense for everybody?
I'd like to think so.
Okay. Greg?
Gerrard's retirement. He's younger than me, and he just seemed older than time when he went, and it was his time to go.
Right.
Many, many years ago, played against him when he was 15 and I was 16. And
yeah. Didn't he make you feel old that time?
Yeah, very old, yeah. I actually, that day I discovered I needed glasses because the keeper kicked the ball out and it just turned into a massive blob in the air and just smashed me in the face. It was, there you go. I'm off to another career, lads. Bye.
Great story, though, Greg. Did you feel there was something very special about him that day?
Just hard and good and, like, you know, just all these players.
Sorry,
are you
talking about Duff or Gerrard?
No, Gerrard. Oh. Yeah. Him. Like, there's a few players played against back then and you just knew they were just a different class. Michael Owen scored like a goal with his back heel from about 15 yards out. You just think, nah, yeah.
You played against Michael Owen in that period?
In a different game around that time.
Yeah.
I was at Marine's youth team at the time and we played against all the Northwest, like, kind of teams of the you know, the professional teams, A and B teams. Most of their B teams. Now it's called, like, the Premier League, under, you know, whatever it's called.
Right.
Elite kind of academy for private school kids or something.
Yeah. Was there anybody who's since gone on to have actually a decent career who you marked at the time and actually bossed?
Thought they weren't up so much. Not who went on to have a good career, no. Tell you what, I say good career, David Dunn.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I injured him. Like, I went down his Achilles tendon and he kind of yelped and went off and wasn't doing much at that time. And I didn't, because I was at Blackburn at the same time as him and I didn't think he was up to much. He was very good at that point and he was obviously, you know, full of himself. When he played in this game against us, he didn't do much and then I kind of injured him and he went off. Then he didn't do much for another year or two, but then he sprung onto the scene and was obviously a very talented player with injury issues. So I'm hoping those injury issues weren't Achilles ones. It wasn't kind of on purpose. You know those ones where it's just the devil's on your shoulder and you think, I could just kind of tread on his foot.
His leg was
and
there.
Stop him. Yeah, his leg was there. But I'm not that kind of player.
Of course you're not.
No.
Fascinating, Greg. So anyway, well, Chelsea...
That makes you feel old, by the way, just constantly retelling these stories from 19 years ago. Jesus Christ, I haven't got any new ones. Mm. Yeah.
Well, no, you're mates with John Power.
Oh.
From Cass.
Well, okay, yeah. Another one passed you, you know. He has got a new album, yeah. Yeah, he's very proud of it. He was on Soccer AM the other day.
Oh, yeah. Mm. What's it called?
The new album. I can't
cast.
Yeah.
It's with John Power. He's not cast anymore, is he?
They reformed. That made me feel old.
Mm. Oh, them reforming.
Yeah.
Okay. Listeners, sorry, I'll get back to Chelsea Sunderland. And they had that 4-3, and it was kind of full of hijinks. Basically, Conte made 9 changes. Costa went off and snatched cake from the press room, the legendary Chelsea press buffet. And John Terry scored a goal at one end and then kind of helped Watford score one at the other end. And it was all very exciting. Is it going to be similarly entertaining, do you think, when Sunderland come to town? Are they going to absolutely mash them?
I think it'll be a big party. The game will just be a sort of a distraction from the main event, I'd imagine. There's a Chelsea fan of my acquaintance who's absolutely convinced Sunderland will beat them. Maybe they will, it doesn't matter. It's going to be great.
Right.
Party for Chelsea and their supporters.
Okay, and of course Jordan Pickford.
And I mean, the thing about this Chelsea team, they seem to be, dare I say it, like quite likeable compared to Chelsea teams of sort of recent yore.
Yeah, people were mentioning this on Monday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, but I think it's a widespread feeling that they are simpatico. Speaking of simpatico, Jose Mourinho's Man United are taking on Palace, another of those games that he doesn't want to play. Parisa Ben was suggesting he might employ the tactics of the end of... Do you remember Man United's final game of last season, which was at home to Bournemouth, and had to be suspended because someone had left, in the immortal words...
Suspect device.
Well, an explosive package in the toilets, yeah. They had to come back and play, I think, 3 or 4 days later. But anyway, assuming that game does go ahead...
Well, Jose... I did the minute-by-minute of... United's goalless draw with Southampton, and it wasn't as bad as the scoreline suggested, but United again were dire. And afterwards, Jose Mourinho went on a lengthy rant about, well, he said before the game, you know, he was asked, do you think this can help your preparations for the Europa League final? He just smirked and said, no. Not really.
Surely he can just put his reserves out in this game.
Yeah.
Nothing, but it doesn't matter anything for Bournemouth.
Well, he has already apologised in advance to Manchester United supporters for the team he's going to put out against Palace, and jokingly requested that Big Sam go easy on them and leave Christian Benteke at home. But, you know, these excuses, and it is a complete irrelevant game, but... The thing is, Palace can still go up two places up the table, which is worth about $4 million to them, or they can go down three, depending on how results go elsewhere. And they're fairly trifling amounts in the football Premier League scheme of things. The only thing I would say is Jose Mourinho said they should be allowed to play their game on Saturday to give him more time to prepare for the Europa League final, and that's probably fair enough.
Yep.
But if you're taking the Premier League shekel, then, you know, if they tell you when you're playing on Sunday, then that's when you play, and you can't really whinge about it. Also, you know, he had the team he had out against Southampton was worth over £200 million. Couldn't beat Southampton. Southampton were probably better than them. Missed a penalty. Manolo Gabbiadini missed a penalty. The only benefit of that game was it gave Sergio Romero a good sort of
run out
because he was very busy.
Oh, right. Valderez says, interesting debate going over on the Football Weekly Extra Facebook group. I didn't even know this existed.
Yeah.
Parallel universe in which people are discussing stuff on Facebook. The debate, anyway, if Man United win the Europa League, does that mean they've had a better season than Spurs? After all... Hear him out. After all, they've won two trophies and got Champions League, whereas Spurs didn't win anything this year.
I would say the record books would suggest, yes, they have. I think anyone who has watched either team on a regular basis this season would say no, no chance. They have not had a better season.
It's all about the journey. It's all about the journey, Jimbo.
Is that right?
The Spurs have had a better journey.
Better journey. Mm. Yeah. Don't stop believing, says producer Ben. Yeah.
Spurs fans have every right to be hugely optimistic about next season. I think Manchester United fans,
apart from the Wembley thing, though, that is a bit of a problem, isn't it?
Right. What about Saints fans? What about Southampton supporters? How optimistic will they be? Will Claude Puel still be there next year? And is he currently gripped by a similarly kind of like meh response from to that enjoyed by Mazzarri?
Yeah, could be the next to be Mazzarri. But yeah, that both of those jobs seem to be Marco Silva's to turn down. If I were him, I know which one I would take.
Which one, James?
I'd definitely take the Southampton job, right, without doubt. You've got Watford are a stable, solid club, but we've talked about the kind of managerial turnover there. Saints are kind of, I think, reflective of the kind of club that he probably came to the Premier League to coach, really, to get to, yeah, Hull was his gateway into there, and I think Southampton would be the kind of right place for him. So...
There you go, Marco.
It's curious, though, because, like, you know, again, if we go back to Watford, I think one of the things that's really appealed to people about Silva is just how quite charismatic he is. He has an aura about him, and he speaks the language well. Whereas I think some of the other candidates for the Watford job, there's a lot of talk about Slutsky being...
Leonid Slutsky?
Yeah, Slutsky being among the favourites for it, and Slutsky... I think it would be a backward step even from Mazzardi in terms of body language and language.
That would be hilarious.
Yeah.
But he's been in London for quite some time,
hasn't
he? Leonid
Slutsky?
Yeah. As a guest of Roman Abramovich, and he's been sort of acclimatising himself to England culture, English culture, going to a lot of musicals, travelling around the tube, visiting various places, attending training sessions at various clubs, basically educating himself. So, yeah, it probably wouldn't be a surprise if he pitches up somewhere sooner rather than later.
I had no idea. Okay.
I mean, the thing about the Southampton gig, there are people arguing that Claude Puel has done a good job, and you can see their point of view, but Southampton fans seem to think, and you can also see their view, that the style of play is just really dull and they want more entertainment. A case in point being Southampton's game against Manchester United was their fourth in a row at St Mary's, where they failed to score.
Mm. And they're 17 points down on last year.
They were heavily stretched by the Europa League in the beginning of the season. I don't think that helped with the fatigue that they felt, because I think the squad just wasn't big enough to cope with that as well.
Well, I did a survey of the Southampton fans actually during the week, and he said that he would actually like to see Puel given another year. He felt that was fair. So there you go. Also this weekend, last chance to enjoy for this season, Swansea. They're at home to West Brom. West Brom have dropped to ninth finally. Seven games, they've picked up 2 points and scored 3 goals in that time. That's since beating Arsenal. But anyway, that game is happening. There's no way of stopping it. Same goes for Burnley against West Ham, which is about a little bit of money, I guess, moving up or down a couple of places. Hull are up against Spurs, featuring the aforementioned Marco Silva and the aforementioned Pochettino. Will we look back on this ahead of a Clasico one day and say, oh, do you remember when these two were managing Hull and Spurs? And we'll say, how old does that make you feel?
Yeah, well, we've seen Pochettino this week come out and basically say he's definitely going to be at Spurs next season, which I think was, again, a kind of reaction to a lot of these reports of, like, you know, Inter Milan being in town and trying to persuade him, how in vain that would have been. But I don't know. Pochettino, again, he's friends with one of the directors at Barcelona. Their kids went to school, the same school in Barcelona as well. But seems very kind of, again, even now, still very loyal to Espanyol. So I don't think you could see him in a Clásico unless it's for Los Blancos. Could you see Marcos Silva at Barcelona, Jimbo?
I don't know. I mean, stranger things have happened. If Leonid Slutsky is taking over at Watford, absolutely I can. Right, that's that game. And then Leicester Bournemouth. Both sides, if victorious, could finish as high as eighth, which, given the seasons, you know, given some of the troughs that they've encountered on the way, is pretty remarkable, isn't it?
That reflects just how the league is now split between, kind of, again, between those who've got a bit of cash and those who haven't, I suppose.
Hmm.
You look at it, Everton are on their own on this little island in seventh place, then you've got a top six, and below it, the rest of the teams, like 6 points above what would traditionally have been a relegation figure, you know. So,
well, that's the thing. West Brom is still in ninth, even though they haven't won in 8 games.
Mm.
It's just
so. Yeah. Make of that what you will.
West Brom were eighth since the 19th of December.
Mm.
It's only last weekend that they finally dropped to ninth. Robert Murphy asking if we think Eddie Howe will stay at Bournemouth after his impressive performances.
Yes, because again, where does he go? There's none of the top seven clubs that they're going to want Eddie Howe, so are any of the other clubs a step up particularly? I mean, I know Bournemouth are a small club, but I think you've got a good core squad there, and why leave at the moment?
Yeah.
Put your career in jeopardy.
Absolutely. Right, well, let's conclude there for the moment, the Premier League chat, and then after this, we'll move on to those playoffs.
Over the last 18 months, more than 125,000 men have stopped wasting time and money on their shaving supplies and signed up with Cornerstone, who just happened to be the official shaving partner of Football Weekly. Cornerstone have just launched their brand new razor with super-heated and ice-hardened Japanese chromium steel blades. Woof! Try it for yourself and take £10 off your first order at cornerstone.co.uk/guardian.
If you're feeling a little bit underwhelmed, listener, can't imagine why, but if you were by those Premier League matches this weekend, the good news is there are some fixtures which have an awful lot riding on them. Barry?
Well, you've got Millwall Bradford in the League One playoff final on Saturday. So it's Millwall finished sixth, Bradford finished fifth. Stuart McCall managing Bradford, Neil Harris managing Millwall. Two nice guys, two good, decent managers. Both with sort of cult hero status at their respective clubs from their times as players. Bradford, well supported, get 20,000 at most home games. Expected to bring over 25,000 to Wembley, although they have criticised a certain newspaper for saying that their numbers will be down because they're a lot of the fans feel intimidated by the fact that they're playing Millwall, so they're reluctant to say bring blokes, are reluctant to make it a family day out and bring wives or kids who might not normally go with them to the football. Bradford and Millwall have both, you know, hit out of this saying it's nonsense. You know, Millwall lost last year's final against Barnsley and there was trouble at it. Not too much, but... and, of course, the hoopla surrounding the Millwall regeneration, which you probably discussed with Barney on Monday.
Actually, not so much, but...
All right.
We mainly talked about pot noodles.
Okay. Mm. So, yeah, it should be an interesting game, you know, pretty well attended. I don't think neither side has sold out their allocation yet, but, you know, tickets are on sale, I think, to close a play on Friday. And Millwall, I kind of fancy Millwall to win it. They've had a lot of big games this season, you know. They beat Leicester, Watford and Bournemouth in the FA Cup. They showed a lot of mettle to just get into the playoffs because they were 3-1 up against Bristol City in their final game of the season, and Bristol City pulled it back to 3-3, so Millwall had to dig deep and get a late winner just to get into the playoffs. Mm. So if they do go up, you know, they'll have gone up from finishing sixth, and personally I hope they do make it up, but it should be an entertaining and interesting game.
All right, well, also on their way to Wembley are Reading, who beat Fulham 1-0. In the second leg of their championship playoff. And they're going to be facing Huddersfield, who on Wednesday beat Wednesday 4-3 thanks to German penalties. David Wagner had tipped this. He said, we've got German penalty-taking technique, and it proved vital.
It is, yeah. And also Danny Ward in goal, who he made a big call on him because he was suspended for the first leg. And I forget who his replacement was. Forgive me, replacement. He went back with Danny Ward for the second leg when, you know, there was no reason not to have the other keeper in because he's 0-0 in the first leg. And then Danny Ward made two big saves in the penalty shootout. Right. He's a Liverpool goalkeeper as well, him. So maybe at Anfield next season, because there's still a question mark over Liverpool goalkeeper next year.
Isn't there always, Greg? Okay, Peter Nichols says, would Huddersfield Town going up, were that to happen, be the most surprising promotion from the Championship in the last decade? Or would it be Burnley in 2009?
They finished, is it 19th last season? So it's a massive turnaround, although they did show a very big upturn in form from when Wagner took over mid-season. They finished the season on a high, so they were... You know, it's a bit like how Leicester finished the season before they won the title. I'm not saying that they've not been as phenomenal as that this season. However, he stuck with the same kind of style of gegenpressing, you know, high energy. Although I think he's used his contacts very well to get some good loan signings in there. He's the players he's brought in were very impressive. So Danny Ward in goal. He's brought Aaron Moy in from Man City, the Australian. I just don't know what he's doing at Man City because he signed him in the summer. I don't even know what the fee was, but he's 26 years old. He's never going to play for Man City yet. He's out on loan at Huddersfield, and he's probably good enough to be in, you know, a mid-ranking Premier League club, and they've got him in their midfield this season, which is very good. And they've also got Casey Palmer and Izzy Brown from Chelsea, who've been very impressive this season. I think you can do that if you are kind of respected within the game, as David Wagner is for what he did when he was working in Germany.
Right, well, Huddersfield Town's final against Reading will be on the 29th of May, the day after the League Two playoff final at Wembley. What else we got for you this week? Well, former Liverpool striker Dirk Cow... Dirk Kuyt. I finally learned how to say his name, and he goes and retires.
It's not Kuyt then.
No.
It's not Kurt.
It's Dirk Kuyt. Dirk Kuyt.
When we said Kuyt when he first signed.
Yeah, that was right
all along.
That was right. And he's announced his retirement after, as we mentioned on Monday, helping Feyenoord to the Eredivisie title. I say helping. He won it. He had all three goals in the last game of the season. And that's their first title in 18 years, and there was much rejoicing. You probably saw the scenes of happy Dutch folk wandering in and out of fountains around Rotterdam. Disco Busquets says, in terms of rising to the occasion, Dirk Kuyt's, it's so different. Performance yesterday is one of the best I've ever seen for any player, legendary. So he obviously enjoyed that. There were a lot of posts lamenting the departure of this beloved European football name. It's going to be a lot of that kind of thing, though, don't you think, James Horncastle?
Well, what,
posts
Totti?
Lamenting that, no, yeah, actually... Yeah. That's what I was talking about. Post lamenting the departure of a kind of European football standard.
Yeah, there is that.
Anyway, right. Comment is free, for example, seizes the occasion to say, if you spoonerise Dirk Kuyt's name, you get Kirk Doubt. Not the way I pronounce it, you don't. Any other sporting spoonerisms? It's that time of year, Greg. Do you want to hear the other ones we got in? STR says John Terry becomes Ton Jerry. Petacek is Cheetah Peck, if you cheat a bit. Martin Peters, part in meters, says Trevor 46. He then goes on to suggest that Olympic athlete Willie Banks is, yeah. And Evil Loundria does a similar trick with Chris Brunt. But I think Portlander wins this particular category with Robbie Savage, which is Sobby Ravage. Barry, you're unmoved. I remember the commentator Gary Bloom, we used to call Barry Gloom.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Let's move on then to more important matters. Kylian Mbappe with his 15th goal of the season as Monaco defeated Saint-Étienne 2-0 to seal the title 4 years after winning Ligue 2.
Yeah.
Well done, Monaco.
First time since 2000 that they've won Ligue 1. They did it even though, yes, this project was started by them injecting a lot of money into the club, but PSG, I think, is still worth two times more their squad than Monaco's is.
Really?
And, yeah, there's players like Valérie Germain, who I think scored in the win against Saint-Étienne, who was a part of the team that was in Ligue 2. So it's kind of come all the way through. And I think there were only five players in that Monaco team who'd won a league title before. Just kind of reminds you of how many players that they've either brought through themselves or recruited at young age and developed. Yeah, remarkable.
Remarkable. Mbappe's had more goals this season than Neymar or Benzema. Ligue 2, meanwhile, Greg.
Well, that's where you get your last day drama, if you feel there's an absence of it in the Premier League this weekend.
Why is that, Greg?
Because tomorrow night, Friday night, there are six teams at the top of Ligue 2 who could all still win the title with just one game remaining.
Mm.
There's only 3 points divide Strasbourg at the top and Nîmes in sixth place.
Mm.
And none of the teams play each other, so there are actually six games to stay across tomorrow. Yeah, and it's just there are three promotion places to go for, so there's going to be those shots of players who are hunched over at the end in tears at the end of the league having not got promotion. There's going to be 33 of those players tomorrow night.
Wow.
So that's a lot of pain and a lot of joy for people.
Well, you're right, actually. That's what it's all about.
And people say, the outsiders are Nîmes in sixth place.
Nîmes.
But they play the bottom of the table side and... they only have to win, whereas the other ones play mid-table. So it's
an extraordinary situation, isn't it?
It is.
Why, Red Star, Red Star Paris, they're not amongst that.
No, they're not. They've actually been relegated. The team who were kind of beating the drum for the little club last year and hoping to get into Ligue 1 have had a dreadful season and have gone down. So to Ligue Nationale, which isn't a right-wing French political party. It's actually a third tier of French football. Yeah.
You've just lost... A playoff final.
Mm.
It's been really tense.
Right.
What? How would you react? You see, players react different ways. Would you be the guy hunkered down, keeping your balance with one hand while you've got your thumb and forefinger sort of clasping the bridge of your nose?
Would you be
flat out on the turf?
Right.
Would you just be walking around looking dazed?
Yeah.
Which do you think? I reckon I'd be the guy going around G-ing other people up. I'd like to think I would.
Isn't that the job of the winning team, that they go around and make magnificent.
No, I'd walk over. I'd see Greg slumped on the grass, and I'd tell him to get on his feet.
Yeah,
I would be slumped on. I'd be flat on my back in a would situation you, yeah. like that. Usually, be just because it's so tiring playing football. At the end, you want to lie down anyway, with extra disappointment.
But maybe if you'd worked harder in training, you could be like me,
okay,
walking around and pulling people.
The vibes,
off
okay. One issue about that is that. You know for a while this is coming, no? I mean, not just through the season, but specifically the game. You know, it's not just when the final whistle blows, you go, oh, so it didn't work out then. But I know what you mean. I guess you're busy with the game and then suddenly it hits you. James, if you would have, say, received...
It's a last minute winner and you've been on the wrong...
Oh, no way. So you suddenly, out of the blue, see your... Out of the blue, see your dreams crushed. Just hypothetically, how would you react were suddenly you to receive like news like that, that about?
I'd put a brave face on.
Would you?
I'd say all the right things, but deep down.
You'd feel crushed. So you'd be one of those people like Barry patting people on the back.
I think so, yeah.
So you've got a vibes man, a brave facer, and a crushed kind of slug.
Right. Interesting. Good
how about
know.
You, Jimbo?
Jimbo will be right now to transfer request.
No, there's not too much to transfer from in that sense. The league is still going on, but now Real Madrid only need a point to seal the title after Cristiano Ronaldo popped up with another couple of goals in their win midweek over Celta Vigo. He's now the all-time highest scorer, Cristiano Ronaldo, in the big five European leagues, overtaking Jimmy Greaves. He scored 367 goals, Ronaldo. It's just amazing. I remember when he was at Man United, he was a phenomenally talented player, but you didn't think of him as necessarily a copious goal scorer.
He did. He had that season towards the end of his time at United.
It's something that then began to develop.
Yeah. And he transformed. And his transformation from when he first went there to what he's become is quite something. In a different way to how players often end up playing in deeper roles, he's actually pushed himself further and further and further up the pitch.
Yeah, I think he's a really good player. In Italy, midweek, there was the Coppa Italia final at the Stadio Olimpico, James.
Yeah, and Juventus beat Lazio. It was 2-0 after 20 minutes. They kind of dominated, even though there's an early scare for Juventus as Keita hit the post.
Mm.
But again,
what a ball through, by the way, for Keita. Who was that from? Somebody slid the ball up the touchline for him that released him.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Can't remember off the top of my head.
Anyway.
But again, it was all about Dani Alves, if you like, who once again came up big. And just this remarkable stat of him. This was, I think, his 30th final, and he's won 27 of them.
Wow.
I mean, in terms of winners, this is someone who's already won the treble twice with Barcelona and could now do it again with Juventus.
A treble of trebles.
Yeah, they can win the league at the weekend. They just need a point to play Crotone. But that could be the game of the year because Crotone, over the last seven games, have got the best record in Serie A, better than Juventus. And they need to win.
They're fighting for their survival. Yeah.
Just ask a James a Serie A related question. There's all this talk about Inter and all the money they're going to have next year to spend. Are they not going to actually lose some of their own players though? Because it seems to me they've got like three or four very talented players there who are at an underperforming club. So are they not? Would they be prime for plucking from other clubs?
A lot of people ask this about Icardi in particular, but Icardi is strangely very loyal to that club and actually comes out at the end of every season now because they just always disappoint and there's always this speculation about him. And he says, I fell in love with this town, I fell in love with this club, this is why I kind of moved with my now wife and family. He has kind of quite old school values. But all
that ultra stuff is completely gone now from the beginning of the season.
Well, with him, there were protests at the weekend in which the ultras walked out after 20 minutes saying, seeing as you're not worthy of our support, we're going to go out for lunch now. They do need to sell. I think they have to make some money before the end of June. So there's been a lot of talk about various Inter directors being in London this week and people linking it with Conte and Pochettino, but I think it's more about having discussions about some of the players they want to offload, like Perisic, for example.
Mm.
They think they can get a big windfall for something like 40 million. So,
really?
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. Okay, well, anyway, that's happening this weekend. Juventus taking on Crotone, the penultimate weekend in Italy. So if it doesn't work out this one, they can always sew it up in the final weekend. Sanuli, a real Forest Green Rovers chat. Of course, they just got promoted to the Football League. They're my local club. Know the players, don't have to be vegan. but they are encouraged to go vegetarian and red meat is out. Also, the club provides them with electric cars. That's cool. Away fans can rest assured that pies, chips and curry sauce are all available. The catering may be vegan, but it's recognisably supporters' fare, and Forest Green Rovers fans are used to having the "Who Ate All the Corn" sung at them. Dave Whelan is my hero. Responds saying the FGR chairman was on the, or owner was on the radio this afternoon, and he was saying his favourite song was "Where the Burger's Gone."
I think the Guardian are actually supporters of Forest Green Rovers. I think the Guardian's got Ecotricity on, and their chairman is the fellow who owns Ecotricity. So,
okay.
So if you, and I've got Ecotricity at home. So if you want to get behind Forest Green Rovers and show your support,
right,
switch over to Ecotricity.
Johnny Five Eyes says that the current stadium is solar powered with an organic pitch which only uses recycled rainwater and all sorts of other stuff. Thanks, Johnny. Just a little update to Monday's pod. Ivanovic missing a Champions League final. You're right, everyone who wrote in. It was, of course, the Munich one, not the one in Moscow. Also, apparently, Sebastian Coates is pronounced Coates, not Coates, thanks to Unholy Smoke and Joseph Hook for pointing this out, because his dad is Scottish. But on the subject of English-sounding foreign players, Gendo offers Denmark's Martin Braithwaite. That's a good one.
A lot of people seem to call the Huddersfield manager David Wagner, but I believe his father, who he hasn't seen for many, many years, is an American, which would suggest,
Robert
unless he's
Wagner.
Taken his mum's name, that his name is actually David Wagner.
Okay. Here's another post. This one's from Menduksai, who says, any podcast planned for the long summer ahead, preferably football-related and not Indiana Jones-related? Oh, I'm surprised, Menduksai, because so many people really appreciated hearing Ian and me bang on about those two films. I'm kidding, of course, lots of people didn't appreciate that. And they don't want that kind of thing happening again. Although, hang on, here's Benjamin Smith saying, does the Back to the Future trilogy break the widely accepted first two films good, third film bad rule? What do you make of that? The one where they go to the Old West, Greg.
I still thought that third one was a bit ropey, wasn't it?
Really?
Yeah, not as bad as... I mean, if you look at like the Alien and... Alien
don't... 3, yeah. You'll get in trouble if you say that.
Oh, yeah. That third one was... Yeah.
It was.
You shouldn't say this. You will upset some of our more entitled listeners.
Whereas that is absolutely going to upset nobody. Producer Ben's got a fact about the Back to the Future trilogy. Let's hear it, Producer Ben. Okay, Producer Ben pipes up and says that the Back to the Future sequel and threequel were filmed back-to-back, as is now the custom with these things, but specifically back then, so that Michael J. Fox wouldn't age, which is ironic, because it's a film about kind of time travel, and they were so bound by the effects of time that they had to... All right, I've gone on long enough. But yes, Menduksai, we will be doing podcasts over the summer. Of course, before that, next week, Max Rushton's here, Barry.
Huzzah!
There we are. Max Rushton is in the Huzzahs, and he will be taking care of business with Football Weekly and Football Weekly Extra. I return the week after.
Return from where?
From Botswana.
World's Strongest Man?
Correcto mundo. And for a special Thursday pod, looking ahead to the Champions League final. And then... the really exciting news is that we're going to be doing a special series of contractually obligated podcasts, Confederation Cup podcasts, throughout that prestigious tournament. I mean, what a summer of sport it's going to be here with Football Weekly. People, if you want more movie news, I'm excited to tell you that right now, dropping onto the World Wide Web and a podcast centre near you, is Truth and Movies Episode 4. In this one, we give our verdict on the truly bizarre Anne Hathaway kaiju Korean monster flick, Colossal, and on Guy Ritchie's King Arthur. Oh, yeah. Oh. Boy, is he still going. which features a cameo from David Beckham.
Of course it does.
Of course it does. Anyway, and that's all in Truth and Movies Episode 4, which is out right now. Anyway, that's it for now. Anything you want to plug? What are you doing on Sunday?
We've got EFS, second two against Lazio.
EFS, are they still making those?
not for much longer, Jim.
Right, okay.
But
should be a big one, no?
Yeah, hopefully we'll get to see, I think 50 Cent is playing at the Stade Louis II as part of Monaco's title celebration.
Wow,
so maybe we'll go in there.
Is he a Monaco resident? What's the connection?
He's going to be in the club in a very real sense.
Exactly. Yeah. Not sure.
Greg, what are you up to this weekend?
Okay. Working Saturday, I'm going to the pub on Sunday.
Bingo. Like
John Power, pints with John Power?
Probably.
Right.
Yeah.
And Barry, you'll be doing your radio show with Max Rushton.
Yeah. 11 to 1, TalkSport.
Excellent. Guys, ladies, have a fantastic time. I'll be back on the 1st of June. So have a splendid time in the meanwhile, and we'll catch up with you all soon.
The Guardian.